Hunter Ravenna Hunt Hendricks is a multimedia artist who works in music, sculpture, film, and philosophy. She's best known as the leading creative force in Liturgy, a band that describes their music as transcendental black metal, though they sometimes don't sound like metal at all, more like electronic, classical, post-punk noise music. The music is often intensely dark and ecstatic, and Hendrick's voice sounds like the wails of an ancient suffering god. The term transcendental partly refers to Hendrick's spiritual work, which she places at the center of her art. For many years, she's been constructing a system of thought she calls Transcendental Kabbalah, which draws on occult traditions, Western philosophers, and most prominently, her devout Christian faith. In the last few years, she's been describing the shape and twisting complexity of her ideas in YouTube lectures, on social media, and in her music. Most recently, Hunter's been exhibiting sculpture and currently has her first ever exhibition up this month at Gurn and Regalia in New York City. She also just got off a long tour promoting her massive work, The Origin of Alimonies, which is an opera that merges narrative, film, and autobiography. For her, it's also a blueprint for her utopian vision. She thinks of herself as a kind of modern prophet, receiving this work through gnosis, which is a kind of direct knowing rather than an intellectual understanding. The creation of Origin of Alimonies was done in parallel with Hendrix's gender-affirming transition, and she wove her own transformation into her mythology. This is one of the many ways Hunter expresses the ideas at the heart of this podcast, a unification of artist, art, and life, or subject, object, and verb. This episode seems to be the second in an informal trilogy of podcasts we're releasing on artists who work with opera. The first was with Jared Medair, discussing his Frozen operas, and the next will feature Noor Mubarak on her operatic installation in Los Angeles. For all these artists, opera reveals the potential of unifying many forms of media. For Hendrix, this work is in line with artists such as William Blake, Joseph Beuys, Genesis P. Orridge, and Richard Wagner, all of whom were interested in creating a total artwork that could activate every element of human potential.
Call it an opera, but I guess as operas go, it's on the total work of art side of things. Like, not every opera is self-consciously a total work of art, but it has a couple of different modes, you know. So it is a liturgy album. We released the album, and it's also a film that I shot on my own and edited that I'm in that tells the story of the birth of reality from the perspective of like my system of philosophy, which is partially rendered as a sort of mythopoeia with like characters in it. And so, yeah, so there's, I mean, like part of what I'm interested in with it is the nexus between metal and classical music, which is what I think people are most aware of and what's going on with it. But then there's this also, there's this drama element, and the intention is to sort of, you know, bring music, drama, and philosophy together in a way that is new for our time, that includes like sort of cultural intervention and kind of like social media performance in the mix. So it's like the Wagnerian vision, but a more contemporary spin on it.
And what specifically do you mean when you say social media performance?
I think I mean that like the activity of existing as liturgy and as me is a little bit of a battle, I guess, in the kind of cultural domain, because like my work and my music doesn't fit in seamlessly within any particular cultural domain. You know, I sort of have some relationship to the art world. I have some relationship to the metal music industry. I tweet like someone who is like cares a lot about Twitter or whatever, and like it's all and I bring this kind of religious kind of Christian energy into it, and like I'm very interested in the type of freedom that comes from relating to multiple cultural domains as a kind of alien, rather than trying to find a place in one of them and sort of submitting to its like the desire logic that allows you to succeed in it.
Right, you're embracing the outsider quality that this kind of work affords you.
Yeah, I see that as like a non-ideological gesture, where like I feel fully free in sort of what I'm doing, and it's also animated by a desire to build the kingdom of heaven, which would be a regime of human culture that is a kind of post-capitalist world where like the arts and the fabric of society are one.
Can you say a little more about what your vision is for this post-capitalist utopian society?
It's a vision that has some mystery to it for sure, but I think of there being four terms that describe it. These would be the four values or rights that sort of govern the society of heaven, and they're called sovereignty, hierarchy, emancipation, and individuation. And in short, it would be a world, okay, like really in short, it would be a world where people are completely animated by the desire for the infinite, like the human condition as we know it, where it's like, on the one hand, I want to do what's good and courageous, but on the other hand, I'm struggling with addictions or relationships or whatever. Like that sort of tension is sort of solved, and people are animated to develop their unique gifts under the grace of God. And there's still lots of suffering going on. Heaven isn't a place where everything is fixed, but the suffering, no suffering goes unredeemed. That's kind of the slogan of heaven. So in our world, most suffering does go unredeemed, and that's the tragedy of it. And it's a kind of rarefied thing to be able to live that like Nietzschean life of joy and woe, where like you have pain, but then you learn from it or whatever. But so we would just erase everything else, and that would always be happening for everyone.
How do you see your opera as being a blueprint for this kind of future society?
I see it in a number of lights, which are all kind of metaphorically derived from different philosophical perspectives. So I imagine it being a potential enzyme, where or like a catalyst, whereby like a field of a sort of body of work that if people make contact with it, the kingdom of heaven could in some ways either gradually grow from there, or be triggered in some way. And I see it as a microcosm, like a little sort of prototype version. But I think most important, this is kind of an abstract formulation, but I see it as like a transcendental critique of the current world, where it's like sort of an experiment with the social forms and creative and technical forms that we have, that by like pushing them to their limit, pushing them to some kind of limit, to some point of contradiction, that like an experiment is performed that could cause some kind of threshold to be crossed. So the main thing I have in my mind when I'm thinking about that is like Deleuze's transcendental empiricism. So it's like transcendental critique that's performed not just as philosophical speculation about the conditions of possibility of consciousness, like the Kantian version, but as a kind of creative exploration that in discovering the condition of possibility kind of activates it in some way.
Have there been any total artworks in the past that you feel have successfully proposed this kind of visionary idea of a new model for society?
Well, my conception of total art is sort of patched together from other conceptions of total art that I've encountered. And I don't think that any of them have succeeded in what I'm talking about because they're from the past and this is now. And so, you know, there weren't the tools, but I mean, I have a concept called the arc work, which has a couple of meanings, but one of them is that it actually delineates a tradition of artists in various media who are on the one hand openly sort of spiritual, that have a religious component, and also working in multiple media. And so a lot of that, so in Romanticism, Blake and Wagner are the main references. You know, Blake was obviously doing poetry and, you know, painting / printmaking, as well as he had his own philosophical ideas. And he saw himself as a prophet, you know, who is like, he saw himself as creating sacred texts, like a really good new Bible or something. And Wagner was very similar, except with, you know, music and his librettos. And they were born too early to be aware of the potential to treat like social intervention as an artwork. And so the whole world of Fluxus, and especially Joseph Beuys, is I'm a big appreciator of his work, but that's a totally different conception of total art, and it involves a lot less like skill in all domains. You know, a lot of Fluxus work is kind of seeking to create these like temporary cultural breaches in like specific social arrangements, or to experiment with the boundaries between different medias, but without mastering any of them. And so there's this, you know, Fluxus is kind of harder to approach from our vantage point in some ways than something like, I really believe in craftsmanship. So in a lot of ways, it's a synthesis between Romanticism and Fluxus, I would say. And I think that the Fluxus energy gets into more contemporary music, like Genesis Peorage, I think, is kind of an influence in terms of having a cult that's also a rock band or something, you know, and bringing gender into it.
Yeah.
I see the system I'm working with as a perichoresis, you know, and that term comes from Christianity describing the life of the Trinity. And so this system at the highest level of description is neither philosophy nor art nor music, because I mean, anyway, music is kind of the main thing, right? But like, it's a synthesis of the three, and I don't subsume it under the, you know, I don't resubsume it under one of the categories. So it's not art, you know. It's something from the future that you know, transcends the antinomy between art and philosophy, you could say.
Some of the artists you're speaking about, like William Blake, see their work as an expression of their mystical experiences. Is this how you see it as well? Are you having mystical experiences that inform the work?
I've always experienced my artistic drive in terms of mystical gnosis. Like, I've always felt, you know, a kind of sick compulsion to create, you know, music especially, and with the sense that, you know, something is acting through me that has nothing to do with my conscious desires or understanding. So that's kind of a, you know, that's kind of a creative, like, metaphorical version of mystical gnosis, because that's not really mystical. But because, I mean, you can call that like God working through you, but it's artistic. More recently, my connection to God has become much more intimate, and I've been having more, you know, literal mystical experiences, and that plays a role of its own. That's not quite the same thing as the artistic gnosis, because it's more gentle, I guess, or something.
Gentle.
But it's gentler, because artistic gnosis is kind of, it's always this like struggle. It's very painful. And I think true mystical experience is kind of the opposite of that. You know, it's this very sort of light sense of grace and guidance. And I like the balance that it's possible to create between those things.
So for you, is the difference between artistic inspiration and mystical gnosis about the struggle, you know, with the artist having to struggle to create and the mystical gnosis coming more easily?
Yeah, and especially in the Christian tradition, mysticism is such a personal and tender thing. You know, it's like a loving relationship to a loving God, you know, whereas our artistic gnosis is much more like more of like a relationship to some kind of like strange substance or something. There's a specific essay by Kierkegaard called something like The Difference Between the Genius and the Apostle, and in he has a reply to this question that I think is interesting, which is that the difference between those two things are that both experience a relationship to contradiction, but that for the artist, it's a temporal and temporary contradiction. And for the saint or the apostle or whatever, it's an eternal one. And so that's why, in terms of the relationship to culture, that an artist sort of archetypally will be misunderstood at first, but then a future generation will understand, you know, that's kind of like what we think of as like, that's what a genius is. People are like, no. And then they're like, oh, wow, that was so great. Whereas for a saint, the contradiction is, because it's an eternal one, like no one, society will never really catch up, you know, to the vision of, you know, turn the other cheek or something like that, is, I think, you know, the paradoxical satisfaction that saints find in renunciation. So, but for me, a vision of heaven and the artwork and so forth would involve that antinomy being resolved, however. So my concept of like arc, just like ARK, is like, this goes back to why it's not art, it's perichoresis, that like you can imagine somehow a union of Kierkegaard's eternal paradox with his temporal paradox, and maybe in a future society, the artist and the saint could actually be the same thing. Reference within classical music for me, qua opera, is certainly Wagner. Mm-hmm. And you know, his operas are, you know, his operas are already kind of dissolving the form of opera. He didn't like the term opera. He called his work music drama. And in classical opera, the main, the biggest overarching structure is that in the libretto, you have recitative, where action is taking place, and then arias, where you like sing a really pretty song or something, you know, like Maria Callas doing Puccini or something. And Wagner wanted to dissolve that distinction and make musical works that exist like truly for the sake of the narrative flow of a story. And so you're never really in an aria, you're never really in a recitative, and instead there's this kind of constant churning sort of Sturm und Drang. So I'm interested in working with that way of structuring time, like in Ordine Alimonies, I'm sort of trying to just like bring the intensity truly down to zero and then build in this kind of gradual way towards these like ecstatic climaxes that take place at an appropriate point in time in the narrative. So that's one dimension of opera. But then I do, the more kind of art world type of opera thing is kind of interesting to me as well, in terms of social intervention or, you know, whatever, like experimenting. Like Origin of the Alimonies is actually composed like a Robert Ashley opera in a way, in that I originally shot the film, and then the rhythms of the music are mapped onto the rhythm of the speech patterns of the dialogue in the film. So that's how I constructed it. And that was inspired by Ashley, because his whole thing was sort of speech as opera. But then in terms of my actual musical influences from classical music, most of what I really like is like early modernist or like highly experimental post-romantic music. I really like Scriabin, Messiaen, Prokofiev, Bartok, Stravinsky for sure. You know, I see that musical language as, I feel like it's like the best music there is. Like it's almost like a just objectively like better than other music, because it's still working. Like the Western tonal system and the sonata form that goes with it are so special. You know, like there's nothing, that system when it's at its breaking point and other modes of music are sort of being incorporated into it, or like when it's really like about to be destroyed, like that's kind of the era of music that I like the most. And it has points of continuity with like death metal and grindcore and that kind of thing. Part of what I like about making sculptures is that, you know, everything else I do is immaterial, and it's also reproducible, and so it's kind of like, you know, it's like air or something. And like the sculptures I make are mostly using like distressed materials and like laser engraving and 3D printing and doing lots of like burning and spray painting things, but incorporating the philosophical arcana that I work with in my philosophy system. And I really love being able to create like discrete, like concrete, singular works, you know, that kind of contain a concept or something like that in as like a singular entity. Like I find that just extremely satisfying.
Right. And working with material in this way recalls the body and the way the body, like all material, decomposes. And this is something you also point to a lot in your work, is the material body. And I wonder if you could point to the way you're dealing with that in the opera.
I mean, you may not know this, but the, cause I'm not sure if you've seen the film version, the film of Origin of the Alimonies, because I haven't released it yet. So we only do it in live performances, but the whole story is told on my body. And I shot it during the pandemic, just as I was starting feminizing hormone therapy. And I was really fascinated that, like, I shot the film just at the moment where I was beginning to grow breasts, basically. Mm. And, like, I was fascinated with what was happening to me. And in part, I wanted to use my body because for narrative reasons, because it's a story of birth. You know, it's a sort of, it's like an intimate story of this sort of painful cosmic birth. But on the topic of emancipation, and this kind of gets back maybe to the conversation about the relationship between artistic gnosis and divine gnosis, is that there is also a political gnosis, right, where new subjectivities form because of new technological possibilities. And, you know, the term emancipation is one that people use in all kinds of contexts, you know, freedom and emancipation. And it's never clear, you know, what exactly is being emancipated. And I certainly consider my body to be one of those vectors, and it's mainly something that has to do with my private life, but it's also a part of my art as well, because those things are obviously deeply connected.
So do you see the gender transition as part of this total artwork?
I mean, I actually shot a version of the film that, seeing it, like, pushed me to the to a certain, like, breaking point of gender dysphoria, where like I hadn't transitioned yet, and I was like playing like a male character in the film, and this other person was playing the woman. Like, it's really weird. It's really weird. I mean, my transition is very bound up in my art in a lot of ways, you know, and like finally once I transitioned, then I was like, oh, well, now I can finally release this opera, because I'd written it and made a whole film and everything, but I like didn't feel able to release it yet. And so then once I made the new version of the film, we released the music like 6 months after I came out as trans. But so, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't want to say that, I don't know, you know, like my transition isn't like mere art. I mean, you know, a total art, you know, my conception of total artwork encompasses all things. So, you know, but like, so of course it's part of it. And going back to the topic about Christianity, you know, I think that God approves of this kind of thing, you know, like I think that that's something that currently existing religion isn't very good at creating space for. And not just Christianity, you know, even like Buddhism and stuff. Like there's a lot of gender essentialism in currently existing religion, and that's one reason why Transcendental Kabbalah is so necessary for our world.
Do you resist saying that your transition is part of this total artwork? Because it feels a little reductive, it feels a little profane, like you're calling it a performance.
I mean, yeah, I mean, I think it could sound like that if your conception of the work were a more limited conception of what artwork is. I really live in faith, you know, I really only do what it seems like God is telling me to do. Just in terms of like what I do in a given day, art, social, like moral, you know, it's like faith is a very real, concrete thing.
Thank you for listening to Subject Object Verb, presented by Art Review. I'm your host, Ross Simonini.